If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports gaming world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Christian. All right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, February 7th, episode 71. My goodness. Hello, everybody. As always, thank you so much for listening. Let's get right to it. Moving from left to right on your radio. Up first, we have a man who was spotted at the top of the Space Needle at the Seahawks Super Bowl victory parade today. And there are pictures to prove it. From Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Wiedeye. Brian, welcome to the show and congratulations on your Seahawks Super Bowl win.
Thank you. And I wouldn't dare hang from the top of the needle. That's just nuts.
So are you saying that was Photoshopped? Oh, I'm shocked.
Yeah, I know. There were people, though, hanging from, light posts and stuff, which is always fun to see. But this has just been a surreal 5 days or so now. And we're recording this on Wednesday, which was the day the parade was held. And so I am exhausted. I haven't slept much. And it's just this, I've gone through a wide range of emotions. General giddiness is a main one and really disbelief, because as a Seattle sports fan, you wondered if this day would ever come. And I know I never assumed it would. And part of me always thought that, it never would. So it's the biggest event of my lifetime and probably in the history of the city. And the parade was insane. Just like a million people. I think they're estimating now over a million.
Nice.
And the city of Seattle doesn't even hold 700,000 people. So it's just crazy. And just being around it it hasn't even really sunk in. I'll hear it on the TV, world champion Seattle Seahawks. And it feels like a dream. I've also spent a ton of money on merchandise. So, and I'm happy to do that. I took a trip to the pro shop, and they don't even have everything in. So I grabbed a couple t-shirts and a sweatshirt, and then I went online and ordered about 20 other things that won't be shipped for a week or two. But I can't. It's crazy. I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, we're very happy for you, and we'll give you a little more of a chance for a victory lap in just a minute or two. Up next, we have a woman weaving a path of destruction through the Press Row Madden League and the reigning Super Bowl champion from US Gamer and other places, Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome back to the show.
Why, thank you. My Minnesota Vikings will never actually win the Super Bowl, so I can take solace in winning the occasional Madden League or championship. Can live vicariously through Brian.
Yeah. I feel for other franchises now. I've always been in the position where I sympathize with other ones, but now I kind of feel bad for the Clevelands of the world, you know, and hope that they one day get to experience that too.
Mm. Well, Brian, I'm in the heart of 49ers country right now, and there's a lot of sour grapes over here.
Oh, don't worry, I see that.
delicious sour grapes.
It's lovely to see YouTube videos circulating with conspiracy theories. I love it.
Brian, that was such an exquisite passive-aggressive backhand to Cleveland and to Detroit and to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
Seahawks have been Super Bowl champions for 20 years now.
If they ever get there, you know, that's who I'm rooting for, though, because I've been in that position. It was the same with – I was excited when the Red Sox won in 2004.
That's very sporting of you, Brian.
Well, yeah, that only extends so far. There, most other franchises I aggressively root against. So.
Oh, okay.
All right. Up next, a man who shares at least one thing in common with credentialed Olympics journalists, meaning that clean running water is just a convenience. From the executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
Actually, Rich, how do you know I'm not Skyping in right now from Sochi? I'm just saying. You really don't know.
It is
you wouldn't have Wi-Fi if you were there.
Well, I mean, how do you know I'm not equipped with, like, satellite? I mean, come on. I mean, I'm obviously getting hacked at this point if I'm in Sochi, but yeah. Definitely. We actually got that resolved, I think, today. They actually finally, the apartment complex finally notified us today that, hey, you might be having water issues. We apologize for the inconvenience. 2 days after the fact that we had no water. So, I really appreciate the effort. It was really incredible.
I was channeling Steve Noah because as Chris was live tweeting his various ills with water and with electricity, all I was saying back to him was like, well, you are going to be on the show Wednesday night, right? Like, the most important things are happening here.
Well, actually, and it's really funny because I have like a horrible like code thing going on. So I have a sore throat. So when you don't have any water and you have a sore throat, that's like the worst thing possible. So I literally had to make an emergency run to the store to get a couple of gallons of water. It was terrible.
Up next, we have a man who pines for the simpler days, the bygone era when college postseason games had charming names like the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl. From Kotaku, the author of Stick Jockey, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Rich. You know, I don't know if any of you young whippersnappers remember the dawn of corporate sponsorships. I think it really started in earnest with the Sunkist Fiesta Bowl. And does anybody here drink Sunkist?
Not in the last 15 years, I don't think.
I know. So it should tell you how fleeting the fortunes are for even the sponsors of major bowls. Of course, the Fiesta Bowl that I'm referring to was Penn State and Miami, which set in motion the Bowl Alliance, the Bowl Coalition, and now the Bowl BCS. And now the BCS is gone. But the Poulan Weed Eater Independence Bowl was the kind of bowl that would always send its scouts to ACC games because the ACC was always the kind of conference that had great candidates for the Poulan Weed Eater Independence Bowl. And I can tell you, I must have seen a half dozen games where those guys in their big flaming red fire truck blazers with their Poulan Weed Eater Independence Bowl, and it looked like a patch from a 1970s bicentennial celebration, their logo. And they would always go up, and they never shook hands with the winning coach. They always approached the losing coach, and the losing coach was always unhappy to see them.
And finally, we have a man who, simply put, has redefined the selfie. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
To be fair, I can't take credit for redefining it. That would be one of my Facebook friends who did the Photoshop there that has now traveled all over the internet. It seems like I just can't win with photos of myself, which I think is part of the reason why I went with my, you know, polygonized polygon avatar as my Facebook photo for so long instead of an actual photo of me. But yeah, I don't know about you guys, but you know, I'm also, let me jump in on here. I'm also real sad. It's been so long since there was a championship in New York. So I'm real bummed too.
Oh, my heart bleeds.
All right. And of course I am Rich Grisham. So Brian Weedeye, again, we talked about it a little bit. We're going to give you the opportunity to take your victory lap. The Super Bowl was an absolute debacle for anybody watching the game who was not a Seahawks fan. But at what point did you really start to feel like this was definitely going your way?
2-0 No. again, as a Seahawks fan, you're kind of waiting for something to go wrong. So I think it was... Certainly it was the Malcolm Smith pick six, but then even at halftime I'm sitting there thinking there's no way Peyton Manning is going to – or anybody is going to put up those points on this defense in one half. But I did – you know, I was going nuts, but the Percy Harvin kick return was when I said this is happening, and I was kind of – I convinced myself it was happening. So that was kind of the point where it started to – you know, started to hit me after I ran around the place like a lunatic. So, yeah, that would be, you know, and then even when you get to the end of the game, I'm sitting there kind of watching, and it's a bizarre feeling because it still doesn't sink in yet. And even seeing until really I saw like the confetti and stuff, that was awesome.
Well, again, we all know you're a pure bandwagon guy. So, you know, it's not like you have season tickets. Fans. Yeah, you know, you're not a season ticket holder, haven't dedicated, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars and hundreds of man hours to the team. So, you know, but even with that, we're happy for you, Brian. So,
oh, thank you. Thank you. It was nice kind of also show the dominance of the NFC over the AFC, how there was so much talk, you know. It's funny to go back and look at all the talk, you know, the expert analysis going into that game. But you know, Denver hadn't faced anyone good all year, and you know, the Seahawks had run through top five defenses the last 2 months, pretty much nonstop. And no matter who came at it, if it was San Francisco, I think San Francisco would have crushed Denver too. It's just you know, it was nice to see kind of. Affirmation of beliefs going into that game that actually played out the way, you know, the way that I thought it would. Although I didn't think it would be quite the blowout. I thought a blowout was possible, but there was no way I was going to say it.
Yeah.
I never said it out loud. I predicted 27-16, which I think if Denver fans had responded to me before, they would have said 16 points. Peyton Manning, yeah. Most explosive offense in the history of the game. Are you nuts, Homer? You know, that's what I would have heard. So,
all right. So, one of the questions that I've been asked recently is now that we have sort of gotten out of the launch period, out of the holidays, well before any new games show up on the horizon from a sports perspective, what are we, where have we settled? What are we playing right now the most in our sports game rotation? So I want to go around the panel and ask that question. I'm actually going to start with myself. I'm really basically playing two games. Obviously, our Press Row Madden League has been much more fun than I was expecting it to be. We're moving along at a great clip, playing our games and advancing every couple, two or three days. We have 12 people in the league, which is a really nice balance. You know, you get to play some human games, but you get to play a nice mix of CPU games. So it's been really good. The game, as we've talked about ad nauseum, I have 100 things that I want to see improved with it, but its core level, it's more than good enough to be a lot of fun playing. But the other game that I've been actually playing a lot of as well, now that all of the issues have been settled, I have been playing a lot of NBA 2K14 on the PS4, all of it in the career mode. That's where I have settled, the My Player. I'm actually basically day and date right now. It's my first season. I'm a rookie, and I think I'm on like February 1st or February 2nd. I'm a shooting guard. I play for the Utah Jazz. My team is horrific. They have the worst record in the NBA. Because they can't stop anybody. Whenever the Jazz go down by like 4 or more points, you might as well write off the game because just the defense on the Jazz is horrific. They don't stop anybody. But I'm having a great time playing it. VC has not been an issue for me because this is the only mode that I'm playing. I haven't even been close to tempted to buy any at all. I've improved my player nicely, not like a lot, unlike my career mode where I was playing last year on the 360, where by the end of like the first year I had dramatically improved my player. I'm, you know, more than halfway through the season, and I've only gone up a few attribute points. I have been able to max out my three-point shooting and get pretty high on my inside shot, but the attribute caps are capped out at like 90. So my overall is still in the, I think, 73 or 74. But it's really perfect for me because, first of all, I play most of this on the treadmill. It's a great way to, you know, it's a great treadmill game for me. And one of the reasons it's great is because you can save any time. You know, when you play sports games on the treadmill, you really have to play the right kind of game because it kind of needs to last for your whole workout. And I usually go for about 45 minutes. But with NBA 2K14, you can save it at any point in time. Like, you can be in the middle of the second quarter of a random game in Miami. You hit save and exit, and then you come back the next day and you go, boom, right back into that exact spot. So I love that about it. And like I said, it feels more legit. Like, I'm not maxing out my attributes. There's a lot of attributes, a lot of things that you can choose from, not just the attributes, but also, you know, signature moves and things like that. There's so far a nice balance. There's a bunch of weird things with it as well that are kind of annoying. Like, every time I sit down and talk to the general manager, which has been at least like 10 times, we had the same exact conversation. You know, and the same guy, Bob for maintenance, has a birthday every time. So, like, kind of weird. Some of the in-game tasks are ridiculous. Like, sometimes I'm going to be, I'm told by the coach, go score the next 10 points, which, you know, is the exact opposite of playing proper team basketball. But overall, I am, now that I've settled into just playing the career mode on NBA 2K14, am having an absolute blast playing that. I recognize there are lots of other issues, which we have spoken about plenty, but I'm really just having a great time in NBA 2K14. So that's where I have settled. Let's go around the horn. Cat Bailey, where are you spending the most of your sports game time this February of 2014?
Well, I've already talked about Madden 25, but I'm in two leagues right now, so I'm spending a lot of time with that. But I recently jumped back into NHL 14, despite the fact that I promised myself that I wouldn't, and I'm deeply regretting it at the moment.
Yeah, I saw that tweet earlier. I was surprised by that, because you are a longtime NHL fan.
Oh, yeah. I loved NHL 13. It was a great game, and they ruined it with NHL 14, in my opinion. It doesn't feel right. It feels too arcadey. The scoring is just... slapshots are overpowered. The hitting feels overtuned and ridiculous to the point where it almost feels like Wayne Gretzky hockey on the N64. And it doesn't help, of course. I am sorry to say that the majority of the people in the league that I'm in are not very fun to play with. So
I agree. I was in that league and then I left after a year because I just was tired of getting absolutely destroyed by some of those people you're mentioning.
Yeah, so I don't like to bail on a league early, but I'm really not feeling NHL 14, and I may just sell it and wait for next year because they took a really good thing in NHL 13 and somehow messed it up. I'm really baffled.
Hmm. Smith Sarkar, where are you settling these days in your sports games?
I'm the same as you. Well, minus Matt. The only sports game I'm playing is NBA 2K14 on PS4, My Career, which is, as listeners of this podcast know, that's all I play in any game is the single-player career mode. I'm really, really loving it. I haven't really messed around with much outside of My Career since the second patch, which came out on PS4, like, last week, maybe. I don't know. I'm curious to see what your guys' thoughts are on how performance is. I haven't like checked, for example, my team, but in my career, I've got a guy who's me, except he's like 6'7", 215 or something. I don't know.
Well, let's be fair. In real life, you're 6'6", 210. So
yeah, it's pretty close. But yeah, I've got my guy. I'm on I'm on the Milwaukee Bucks of all teams. I have made the team really good. So we are like third in the East behind the Heat and the Bulls.
What position are you?
I'm a small forward.
Okay, so you're a three. I'm a two. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a scoring small forward. So I've got like the. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of obviously categories and things to spend your points on. I did benefit from the, like, I don't know, 13,000 free VC that they gave out at some point.
Yeah, over the holidays. I've downloaded a couple of those locker codes and gotten VC, and none of it has flowed over to the VC available in my player. So all of my attributes have been earned in game, like a man.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, no, the locker codes, I think, are only for the app, right? Or only for the mobile version? Or whatever?
I don't know, but I have not been able to get any VC other than by playing the game. So
okay. Yeah, I think around Christmas or around New Year's when, you know, stuff was real broken, they just put out, Happy New Year, here's a code for 10,000 free virtual currency. So my guy's at like an 80, and I'm in the middle of January right now in my first season. My big achievement is I'm now the starting small forward.
Yeah, I'm the sixth man. I'm really close to cracking the starting lineup, but I'm still a sixth man.
Yeah, I've like last few games I've been, you know, scoring between 30 and 40 points. A couple of games I had 45 and 10 rebounds and stuff. So I'm finally –
good Lord, man.
I'm finally getting the hang of it. But yeah, it's really great. There are, you know, the more you play a mode like that, obviously, the more you sort of notice the shortcomings.
Yes. And, yes.
In addition to, as many have pointed out, the unskippable cutscenes that a lot of times repeat.
Yes.
Like, as you said, it's Bob from Maintenance's birthday.
As you said in the chat, things are great. Teammates are great. I'm great.
Yeah. yep.
Come on over. Bring your lady. We'll have some dinner, play some 2K.
Yeah. I do like that they have, you know, I'm starting to see some more variety in terms of what's being presented. So I just got like an offer to be an investor in some dude's like sports drink startup, which I declined because it seemed kind of janky.
Yeah, I got offered to invest in a movie and I declined because I think the guy was on meth. So
so that stuff's cool. You know, starting to get more of that, like another – now there's another some hotshot agent who's like your buddy. He's some chump. Let out, you know, sign with a real company or whatever. So that's neat. But it's also weird that, like, aside from the interactions you have with your teammates in the cutscenes, you know, where OJ Mayo is like, "Oh, let you be the Pippen to my Jordan, be the Stockton to my Malone," and I'm like, "Dude, no, I'm no sidekick." There's no knowledge of what's going on with your team. So like I played a game where I was the shooting guard and Caron Butler was starting small forward, and then at point guard they moved OJ Mayo to point guard, and then like the next game Chauncey Billups was the point guard and Mayo was at shooting guard and I was at small forward, and I was like, oh, they must have acquired Chauncey Billups, the Bucks. But like, dude, there's no screen that you can go to for transactions. You know, there's no – they just don't keep you apprised of that kind of stuff, which, you know, I think you would have some knowledge of in the current gen version of my career. I mean, the last gen version of my career. So, there, you know, there's some stuff that they clearly left out, some in some ways basic stuff. But the actual playing and stuff, I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, and good. What are you settling into these days, if anything, in the sports world?
This is going to be very typical, but as you all know, I'm a great lover of video game golf. I've decided to revisit, or in the past 2 or 3 weeks, revisit the career that I left on hold in Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14. I play 4-round events, and I'm up to a rather demanding set of difficulty settings. I finally finished my career, the first season of my career tonight, and was really disappointed to see a glitch that did not award me the FedEx Cup, despite the fact I think I had triple the points of second place Tiger Woods.
It stinks.
I won. I had 17 tour victories.
Wow.
Which is one short of Byron Nelson's record for 18 in a single season. I won three of the four majors, and the one that I did not win, the Masters, I didn't even make the cut.
Huh.
Which, you know, goes back to having an underpowered golfer earlier in my career and also playing at a pretty high level in terms of shot difficulty and other assistances turned off. I had two winning streaks of five tour victories in a row. Coming in, the final tour event was the Coca-Cola Championship at East Lake down in Atlanta. That is a hard course to play if you're a golfer like me, which is a control golfer. I don't have a lot of distance. I do have a hell of a great second shot. I'm a hell of a great putter. But if you've got the wind blowing on you, it makes the second shot a lot longer, which makes the putts a lot tougher. And a lot of the, especially the northeastern courses, you know, it's amazing what you learn about golf, not really even playing it in real life from this game. You know, I'm not trying to make it out to be like sort of the Microsoft Encarta of golf, but you do understand, you know, the differences in course layouts in different parts of the world. And it's not just, you know, the links of, say, the British Isles versus more of the Sandhills courses of the American Southeast. I mean, like Bethpage Black is a real bastard. And there is, you know, I think I ended up tied for 39th in that, and I'm the world's number one golfer, and it's just completely unsuited to the game that I am able to play. So, you know, points for authenticity to the game, but there are – you play – I think I must have played 2,000 holes of golf in this game. And once you approach that level of tenure, you sort of realize – I mean, I think it's a – in some ways, it's a harder game than the previous year, Tiger Woods 13. In some cases, it's an easier game. But the manner in which it is a harder game is the arbitrariness of the wind, the arbitrariness of the elevation, you know, hitting uphill versus downhill. Those things can really combine to screw with you and make you feel like you're just not playing something that's fun unless you tune the difficulty way down, in which case you feel like you're just in a shooting gallery. I'm happy with where I am after my first season. I don't feel a great need to go out and win the Masters right now. So I'm probably going to put Tiger Woods PGA Tour down for a while and go play something else.
Chris Sander, what are you settling into these days during the cold February month?
Right now I've actually gone back and I've played a little bit of SSX. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But man alive, I absolutely love that game. And I've actually been doing a few runs on it lately. And man, I absolutely love that game.
Awesome. It really is. So underappreciated.
I actually gave the game a 9.5 when I initially reviewed it. And it's even better now with all the patches and whatnot that they've applied and the new game modes and such. And I found myself playing that for 3 hours the other day. And of course, I mean, I'm playing a little bit of NBA 2K and Madden and such, but I'm still doing FIFA, a game a day on FIFA. And generally that's about it for me right now. I actually, since SimCity announced an offline mode, I decided to go and try to start doing some cities there. And it's not a bad game either for what I was expecting. And the game actually works right now. So I guess there's bonus points for that, but that's basically, I mean, SSX has really taken over. I mean, once you get into February, right before baseball, I just kind of start playing a whole bunch of different games. So it'll be different if you ask me in a week what I'm playing, probably.
Brian Weedite, what have you settled into this February?
Well, I've been fairly preoccupied, Rich, with other things happening. So it's basically just been Madden and our league. And that's been about it. Been investing time in that and investing emotionally in that also, and getting crushed by ridiculous results. Like the last game I played against that sports gamer who was in my division.
Right.
And I had a 3-point lead with a minute left, less than a minute left at this point. Had him in 4th and 23 on his own 10. He throws a bomb down the sideline. Cam Chancellor just stands there, watches the guy catch it, and he runs for a touchdown. So it was a little deflating there, and now I have to get him back when I play him in a few days. But so it's just been Madden lately because I haven't had the time or motivation to get into anything else at the moment.
And boy, our league, the NFC, is fierce. I mean, basically all of the playoff teams will be humans. It'll be Kat and TJ probably at the one and in the two, although my Eagles could get up to a two if one of you two people would lose a game or two.
I love that TJ beat me and then immediately lost to the Mexico City Diablos.
Who only
the worst
one team
in the game, by the way.
Formerly the St. Louis Rams.
Right.
Led by Matt Schaub.
Right. Yeah. So you've got TJ and Kat right now at the one and the two. You've got me lined up at the three. You got Mike Phillips lined up at the four. You got you, Brian, probably at the five, and then the sixth would be another Donnie Moore, who's got the Carolina Panthers. So could be six of us in the playoffs for the NFC. So all right, moving on. We have had, as we've talked about quite a bit, a couple of new sports game announcements come out in the last month or so. Obviously, RBI Baseball and the Golf Club. And that has a couple of people sending me tweets that say something along the lines of, are we on the cusp of a new era of new sports games, whether they are licensed sports games, whether they are unlicensed sports games? Does the advent of the new platforms, the PS4, the Xbox One, the ability for, some of the development tools and the things that you can do now being a little more accessible to larger groups of people, the fact that, there are more options for distribution and for size, downloadable versus full retail, does this mean that we are potentially on the cusp of some more announcements of sports games? Curious what your thoughts are. Obviously have some thoughts. We'll start with you, Owen Good. Do you think by this time next year we'll have even a few more new franchises of one sort or another announced for sports games fans?
I don't want to kill enthusiasm here. I think these games arose out of very specific cases, and it's important to keep that in perspective. RBI arose plainly because there's no Major League Baseball option on Xbox 360 or Xbox One. I mean, and that's a huge hole that MLB is scrambling to fill, and they're doing it in-house. And they'll do it with something that people will be interested. People are not shut off to this the way they would be, some other stopgap kind of casual filler game. I think the RBI name alone will bring along enough interest where people will give it a chance legitimately. But it's definitely something that is sort of in lieu of, I think MLB's preference obviously will be to have a full partner publishing to, especially to the Xbox One, for God's sake. The golf club thing is, and I've read, features, submit yours as well as on OS. And I think it's fantastic. It's the type of game where we should expect to see more competition because, as we've often said, golf is more about gameplay and course to hold your interest than it is, the licensed things that go along with it. Now, obviously, you want to see Augusta National. You want to see the Claret Jug and the U.S. Open. But if you do have a strong playing golf game, and especially if you've got, some kind of method to have user-generated content, then you can get by with a lower development cost and no licensing cost. And if you put out a real winner, get a lot of traction that way. But that plainly is coming. That is taking shape because these guys were the ones who were going to build Tiger Woods PGA Tour in the off year while EA Sports was working, while its core team, the ones in Tiburon, were working on Tiger Woods PGA Tour 16 on next gen. And when that deal fell apart, when EA, had all its layoffs and its change in command structure, frankly, the golf club is sort of the salvaging of those efforts. So it is noteworthy. It definitely is noteworthy that you've got these two games, one of them non-licensed simulation quality, which is, you know, the rara avis on console gaming. I mean, what's the last non-licensed simulation game we had in any of the major sports? Backbreak? Yeah, exactly. Or before that, All-Pro Football?
Yep.
So there's that. And then there's also RBI, which is an arcade title, which is I've bemoaned and a lot of others have. You know, we didn't have any licensed arcade titles last year. But I to go ahead and say that this is the dawning or the signaling or even a hopeful note for a change in things. No, licensing costs are still exorbitant. Development costs only go up. It's something that is owed to a sort of perfect storm of circumstances, and we'll just have to see.
Submit Sarkar, your thoughts.
Yeah, so I'm in agreement with Owen on this. The golf club and RBI are I think, pretty special cases. They're each some, you know, there are some unique circumstances around the way that those games each arose. And the thing is that the golf club, you know, HB Studios can do what they're doing with the golf club because there is the possibility for an unlicensed golf game to be successful. And as we've seen with other games, All-Pro 2K Football, Backbreaker, that possibility isn't there nearly as much and may not even be there at all for more traditional or the more popular North American sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey. So, you know, the golf club can do their thing, and obviously MLB is going to have its license for RBI. But when you look at unlicensed sports games, we haven't had a good history of them. And maybe that's just because, you know, the games weren't that great. You know, Backbreaker, when it launched, was just not a fun game to play. And, you know, they patched it later on and added some things. And, I you know, I don't know that there were a ton of people who were interested in All-Pro 2K without license, and even if they were, whether that game was, you know, much fun to play, or at least, you know, as fun to play as something like Madden. And the thing is that, as Owen pointed out, you have, especially for next-gen consoles, really high development costs. I was actually really surprised when I talked to Peter Garson, who's the executive producer on the golf club at HB. You know, it's on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. And I was like, oh, so did you guys start on PC and then decide to go console? And he was like, no, we actually started on console. And then when we realized that there was this possibility of doing all this cross-platform stuff, that's when we decided to go on PC as well. The one thing that could, because of, you know, that, the one thing that could maybe make this possible, make it more likely for us to see more of these things happen, is that both the PS4 and the Xbox One support self-publishing. So Garson said that HB isn't decided yet on whether they're going to be self-publishing this game or not. But on the PC, they are. He pretty much confirmed that they're going to do an early access thing, like you've seen with games like DayZ and Rust recently on Steam. And the thing with self-publishing on consoles is that, you know, there's not that gated access, the need to go out and get a publisher. You can develop a game and put it out on these consoles yourself. And, you know, certainly you're paying platform licensing fees that you don't have on PC. But you can do it digitally. You don't have to go put a disc out. It seems like these platforms are also more open for things like digital content, things like what HB is trying to do with regular updates and user-generated content, things like that. So that's one thing that could make it more possible. But I think you still – the base issue is the viability of unlicensed games, or lack thereof.
So you opened the door there, Sumit. You mentioned Peter Garson, the executive producer of the golf club. 1 week from today, if you're listening the day the show comes out, we will have a full-length, one-hour interview with Peter Garson all about the golf club. So look for that on Valentine's Day, February 14th. Getting back to this topic at hand, Cat Bailey, what do you think? Are we on the cusp of a new era of new sports games, or are these just a couple of things that just happen because of the right circumstances?
I wish that I could say that we are, but I don't think so. I will say, however, that there is an opening for anybody who can really hit an arcade, a good arcade sports game out of the park. And I say this because, I mean, I was just recently reading Drew Magary over at Deadspin, and he commented that he mentioned offhand how hard it is to play Madden now. And within the general public, the perception is that Madden is just insanely hard to play. It's inaccessible. It's impenetrable. It's not the kind of game that you would just sit with on the couch with your friends to play. And if we could recapture those days of Blades of Steel and RBI Baseball and put them out for cheap, even free to play, for example, on the Xbox Live Marketplace or PSN or something like that, I feel there is a market for that. But previous efforts, I don't feel, have been very well promoted outside of maybe NBA Jam, or they've been too simple, or they just have not reached the kind of people who would download and play those kinds of games.
So, Chris Shanner, you obviously run Operation Sports. You hear what people are talking about all the time, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Do you think, based upon some of the things that we've talked about, opportunities, development costs, perhaps non-licensing, do you think we're going to see more things like the golf club, where thanks to all the options available, without perhaps spending all the money on licensing and all on development, we might see more of this stuff pop up?
I think with the app revolution, if you guys know what I'm saying, with mobile games, that sort of thing, and the rise of the independent developer, I think you're going to see a few very interesting entries into the marketplace. I think the golf club was kind of just a circumstantial thing. I mean, and we know that it started development last spring, which is roughly, you know, I'm sure they figured out at some point in the last, about that time, that Tiger wasn't going to be happening for them. So I'm sure all that being said, they probably just made the decision to go with that game and try to cut their losses and make some money. And I think you're going to see a little bit more of this for sure. You're going to see some independent developers trying their hand at unlicensed games. I mean, as far as it just depends on what the platforms are going to end up allowing as far as what kind of models. I mean, a pay-to-play or a free-to-play model kind of thing, would that be viable on a console? I mean, no one's really tried any of this, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody does try anything like that. But you're seeing a lot more independent development studios out there, and if you can, and with digital becoming the new trend, I mean, that was really the big barrier to entry. You had to be able to print up thousands upon thousands of discs and get them into stores. Now you don't have to do that if you're an independent developer. There's a great opportunity there, but you also, I mean, it just really depends. I think these first few attempts will be watershed moments, and we'll see where it goes from there. But I think everybody from, I mean, every time a new game, these two games that were announced, anytime you hear of something possibly being announced, people get excited. And I think that's what we've really been missing in this genre for the last year and a half or so. I mean, we haven't had good arcade titles. We haven't had anything like that. I think there's a huge market for arcade kind of titles out there for an independent developer to try. So there's a lot of opportunity. I think there's even a market for it, especially if a developer goes simple with development costs and such. But it's just going to be up to people who are enterprising and have a vision to make it happen.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I don't want to give away too much of the interview that I did with Peter, but he definitely said that he was very surprised at the excitement level of the announcement of the game, and was surprised at the level of surprise there was about the game. But that's just how trained we are, sort of as in the sports gaming community, on having not a whole lot of options anymore. And so when there are more options, even if it's of the unlicensed variety, number one, we're glad to hear about it. Number two, I think at this point in time, we are more willing to give something a chance than we might have been two or three generations ago, when there were five or six NFL games and five or six baseball games and so on. I think that's the other interesting thing is because the choices have been whittled down so much, for the most part, almost anybody who pops up has an opportunity. Now, obviously, you're going to have situations like NBA Live, which just did not have a competitive product, or Pro Evo, which does have a competitive product, but compared to its competition in FIFA, just can't quite get up to par. You know, if you've got two, I think, if there were two terrific baseball games or two terrific football games on the market, I think you'd be hard-pressed to have a lot of people who wouldn't be interested in both. All right, up next, it is the Olympics. The Olympics start today, as a matter of fact, at least officially today. And this marks the first time in many years that there is not a official sim Winter Olympics video game. If you recall, in 2010, there was an official Winter Olympics Vancouver game. There is this year Sonic and or Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympics, only on the Wii U, obviously. It's a little, you know, it's I think we all probably have opinions on this, but it's interesting, disappointing that there is no Olympics Winter Olympics video game this year. I'm curious why that is. So go around the panel and once again, what is the deal with Olympic video games? Why are the challenges? What are the challenges to making it? And why do you think we've gotten to the point where there is basically no Olympic video game this year? Owen Good.
You know, I go back, Rich, to Activision's Decathlon.
Oh yeah.
You know, which was 1984, which I think may have been the first video game to use, if it was unlicensed, a recognizable sports theme in it, because it had the Olympic anthem in it.
Yes,
anyway,
I loved that game. That was amazing. An amazing experience like there had not been prior to that.
Sure, and we can wax nostalgic about that, those of us who are age 40 or older.
In other words, just us two.
Exactly. But I think about Activision Decathlon and Epix on PC platforms, Commodore, Apple, IBM in the 1980s, which had – Epix had the summer games and it had the winter games. And the reasons that those games were compelling and sort of had heft and were something that were worthy of I am playing the Olympics – is it's really – I hate to say this. The mini game quality of what they offered was truly the state of the art at the time. Today, if you were to offer an Olympics sim, either summer or winter games, you know, you couldn't just do one event. You know, you would have to do at least half a dozen. They would have to be the ones that were either the most telegenic or at least the ones that were most playable. And now you're dividing your development time among how many disparate games? I mean, literally. And what kind of engine is going to service them? And how real is that going to be? And then what kind of glitches are going to pop up in it? And then what about judged competitions, frankly? Because ski jumping, you know, I mean, there's figure skating and men love to bag on figure skating because they think it's something that only, you know, is shown at night to gain, you know, the women audience that NBC is broadcasting to. Ski jumping is a judged event. And it is, you know, something that I think a lot of people would watch and try to play if they could. How do you create a game that has ski jumping in it, figure skating in it, speed skating, which would have to be in it, some other kind of alpine event, you know, the slalom or a downhill race. It's too much to juggle, especially, you know, when it comes to Winter Olympics. In the summer games, you know, you're talking about, okay, we're going to run the 100. Now we're going to run the 200. Now we're going to run the 400. And what variety of experience are you offering there? Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, these things could be somewhat novel or unique, or even thinking of Konami's Track and Field, which had, I think, skeet shooting in it. But even then, it was a mini game experience by today's standards. It's just – it's a lot of development time. It's a lot of divided attention. It's a lot of divided resources. And it was something that was just basically a vanity project. And I don't think that an official Olympics, quote, simulation game – something that wasn't Mario and Sonic, in other words. I don't think that was something that the IOC or whoever is handling its licensing didn't want to do anymore. I think it's just because they couldn't find a studio that had people they wanted to put on it. You know, even for, you know, whatever the song they must have gotten for the license, it was probably the cheapest of any major license. You know, the I guess the London 2012 and then, you know, preceding that, the Vancouver 2010 games. It just it's just a mess. It's just too many things being pulled in too many different directions. And if you really want to play Winter Olympic sports, you have those games already. They're called SSX and NHL 14.
Brian Weedow, your thoughts?
Owen covered a lot of what I was going to say. In that, essentially, what you end up with is a series of mini games because of the necessity to spread resources across multiple events. But you also have to consider that this is something that happens every 4 years, or if you flip between winter and summer, it's every 2 years. And so for a consumer to have to pick up a game, they have to relearn it, essentially. You don't have that, well, I played the game a year ago or whatever, and I generally understand how to play it. You have to pick it up and learn, and then you have to split your time between events. So you never get fully comfortable with a single event. That's one way I look at it. And also, you may not even like all the events. You may like one or two, and then, you know, is the game really worth it at that point? But also, as far as why companies don't put more into it, you know, the Olympics last two weeks,
right?
It's difficult to justify development costs on a game where you can only really sell it hard for 2 weeks, because maybe there is some anticipation leading up to the games. I wonder if everybody even knows the Olympics are starting, and when this show's goes live, it will have started. But most, you know, if I didn't browse Twitter, I wouldn't know about it because I wouldn't see the journalists complaining about their conditions there. So it's,
well, to be fair, you're in the middle of a Super Bowl drunken bender. So, you know, you're in a little bit of a special situation.
Yeah. But think about would you say that's different across the nation and across the world? I'm not so sure about that, especially for the Winter Olympics. But regardless, it's still a short period of time where once the Olympics are over, you're not going to sell that game at all. So how much lead time do you have beforehand to pick up sales and then capitalize on those 2 weeks? And is that a long enough stretch of time where consumers actually have interest in playing a game for it? I'm not so sure that's, you know, a very viable product, and that's why you end up with companies, you know, you don't end up with the EA Sports or the 2K Sports of the world making these Olympic games.
If I could tack onto that, Brian, you know, why did NCAA basketball fail? Mm.
Well, it's that's because, a big,
yeah, right. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, that is an event where people are thinking about it. It's only, March Madness is 3 weeks long. And it happens every year.
Yeah.
And people, that wasn't enough to sustain people's interest.
Remember,
so 2 weeks every 4 years, why would anybody buy that?
And EA tried to capitalize it on in a way that you would have to with the Olympics when they,
right,
they said, let's do this March Madness edition.
Yep.
And you know, everybody, and they also tried to push the release date back to January to see if sales would rise because of that, and it didn't. And the downloadable edition of the March Madness edition did not sell as well as they'd hoped. So it's really a predicament there. And like Owen said, yeah, you know, March Madness and college basketball is just another example of, you know, what they face with those similar conditions.
And so, we're really only talking about the Winter Olympics now, you know, 3 days away from the opening ceremonies. Yeah. And it's mostly because the toilets are broken.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Yeah.
But if you look at it from a different angle, right? I mean, there are, and you touched on this, there are several types of events that there are viable existing engines for. You could probably, and I'm probably oversimplifying this, use the SSX engine significantly to put in all of the snowboarding and probably even a lot of the skiing events. You could use, obviously, the NHL engine to do Olympic ice hockey. You could probably put some tools together to make figure skating. I mean, you could potentially, instead of having one big $40 or $50 or $60 game, you could even just have a whole set of games that you could have streamlined and just be available. I mean, Cat Bailey, you mentioned you like figure skating. You know, there are other ways to potentially attack this by offering small versions. Cat Bailey, what are your thoughts on this?
I have two thoughts. First, I think the audience for the Olympics, I don't know if there are any hardcore Olympic fans in the same sense that there are hardcore NHL fans or hardcore NFL fans. Maybe there are. But I just know the Olympics is that one time of year where my friends suddenly really get into sports and take over the TV.
Absolutely.
And
like curling becomes a thing that people know about for 2 weeks.
Yeah. The Olympics are on my TV nonstop for 2 weeks, and there's nothing I can do about it, even if I don't want to watch the Olympics. Those kinds of people, I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not necessarily the type of people to buy an Olympics video game. The second point is, Owen makes a perfectly viable point when he says that there are just too many games that require too many engines. It's too complicated. You cannot make a simulation-based Olympic games video game in this day and age. I feel like the only way to really do it is to release a game either on mobile or online and on Xbox Live Arcade or something like that, as a series of mini games, something very casual focused, not necessarily Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympics, because that's like kids stuff. No offense to anybody who really loves those games, but you know, my 5-year-old cousin really adored those games. You could do it, but you would have to do it in a very specific way. Something very simple. I would even, like you were talking about March Madness earlier, and an Xbox Live Arcade game where it's literally just a tournament. Nothing but the tournament. So you cannot release an Olympic video game as a full $60 boxed retail product in this day and age. It's just not going to work.
Chris Shanner, would you spend $5 for a Olympic ice hockey tournament featuring the players, the real players, the country, and the Olympic medal ceremony? Or would you pay $5 for a alpine skiing event downloadable game, something like that? Would that potentially pique your interest, or do you think offers like that would pique the interest of the Operation Sports community?
I think, honestly, that $5 for something like that, ice hockey, definitely. I think you could get $10 out of that if it was running the NHL engine. Now, if it was running something else and it wasn't any good, you couldn't sell that thing for a dime. The other more minor events, I almost think you have to package them up into $5 or something, $5 packs or $1 a piece or something. $5 for like alpine skiing, I think almost everybody would be like, no. But I think, you know, you start lowering the price point, I think you could probably push something like that, but you would have to lower the price point to a point where people will just compulsively just give the money over. And I think $5 might even be a little too much for just a single event.
Cat Bailey?
Oh, I'm glad that you mentioned NHL, because it's always baffled me but that they don't have an Olympic DLC during Olympics years, because, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, I think you can play as international teams.
Yes, you can play an international
tournament,
too.
And you can set up a tournament,
yes,
but like there's no Olympics.
Ceremony. Correct.
There's no Olympic skin.
Yep.
And I feel like a $5 to $10 DLC on NHL, where you can download essentially the Olympics and play it online, something to the effect of the UEFA Champions League or right. The UEFA League FIFA pack from a couple years ago would be really interesting, but we haven't seen anything like that.
And plus, you know, again, today, what we can do today is different than what we could have done last generation, or certainly the generation before. Like just today, it came out that Steve Stamkos will not be on the team. So you could have during the 2 weeks, you could have the roster updates. You could have, you know, once the Olympics are over, you could have the actual, you know, the final rosters that were used. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different things available. And again, Owen, you mentioned the Activision games. I mean, one of my first favorite sports games of all time was the skiing game on the Atari 2600. It was terrific. It had all sorts of different skiing events, slaloms and downhill. It was awesome. I think, I was just surprised that this is the first year that there was no offering whatsoever, because, you know, there have been so many of these games in the past. But hey, it is what it is, and no Olympic Games unless you got a Wii U and you want to play Mario and Sonic, which is not exactly getting stellar reviews. It's not getting killed, but not exactly getting the best reviews. All right. I think it's time for some listener questions. We've got a bunch of good ones. We are going to start off with this one from Greg Timmerman. Asked the question, how thin does it stretch developers to program for current and next-gen consoles? Right now, we're obviously in the middle of this sort of generational crossover. You know, we're seeing it on the Madden. We're seeing it on NBA 2K. We're seeing it on MLB The Show. Chris Sander, how stretched do you think these resources are trying to build basically two games at once?
Well, if they're smart, if there's smart business plans in place, and honestly, I think they these guys running these companies probably are pretty smart. They probably are not doing much with current gen. They're not putting as nearly as much money and resources into current gen as they were, you know, three, four years ago. So you've got smaller teams already, and the majority and bulk of the resources are going to next gen. Honestly, I bet that. I mean, I don't know specifically, but I'd be willing to bet that they're accomplishing a lot of the same thing with about the same cost. And it's just because you're just not going to see as much. I mean, we saw it this year with current gen. There just wasn't much innovation. I mean, it's going to get even worse. I mean, you're going to be dealing with bona fide roster updates probably as we head into the next few years. I mean, I just don't. And so it doesn't cost much money to do something like that. So I think they're not stretched at all. They've got it handled, and the amount of people they need to do a next gen game, they've got it down.
Submit, you think they're stretched?
I mean, obviously it's more of a stretch than it would be if they were only doing either or. And in particular, when you look at the games that launched across both old gen and new gen last fall, you know, you can see some real problems in some areas. I mean, Battlefield 4, right? That game is on five different platforms: PC, PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and it's a mess on all of them. Or it's getting better, but it certainly launched as a mess on all five of those platforms.
Cap Bailey.
People who have followed Madden will recall that that team at least beefed up considerably and hired a lot of people in preparation for the generational switch. And it's obvious that they put the majority of their resources into the next gen version. It really shows in the difference between the console versions. So they're doing what any smart development studio would do and appropriately allocating their resources. So in response to your question, no, I don't think they're being stretched particularly thin, particularly since studios have been supporting previous gen consoles since the beginning of time. If I recall correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Madden 11 had a PS2 version, for example. PS2 versions of Madden went on for quite a long time after the next gen switch, and I expect that will continue to be the case with the 360 and the PS3.
Owen, good.
I agree with Kat. I mean, the difference, EA Sports recognizably put its efforts into the newer generation of console, Madden, than the previous one. So I agree there. But I also think, I mean, what are we dealing with right now, guys? We're dealing with MLB The Show does not have a release date that is announced yet, and a dearth of information about what we can expect whenever it does release. And this is a game made by a platform maker. And I can only look at this and think, you know, I mean, EA Sports looked at this and realized, you know, they're making a game for two different platforms. Two different platforms, four different consoles, however you want to divide it up in terms of their core audience. And so, you know, they made a more prudent decision to really beef up and be able to address both of those credibly. The show, I can only say that, yes, they are stretched thin if we're talking about a game that is supposed to come out on the first Tuesday of March. We don't have any confirmation that, A, that will happen, B, when it will happen, and C, this is on a machine that is exclusively made by the company that owns the studio. I don't know what is going on over there. I don't denigrate what is going on over there. I'm sure they are up to their eyeballs in work. But it absolutely sends the message right now that, you know, if you're assumed to have that kind of preparation or that kind of advanced knowledge on what you will be working with, and you're this you're this late in telling customers what to expect, that yes, they are stretched thin in at least this bridge year developing a game for both systems that is going to be – it's in this year that's when they're going to be stretched. The next year, everybody's going to be talking about PS4. This year, everyone expects the PS3 game to be as credible to that audience as the PS4 game is to its. And they're having – it suggests to me they're either having a hard time building that simultaneously, or they've got some other kind of an issue in terms of – differentiating it, but I can't understand why PS4 people who bought that console bought it back in November. They want to play baseball now, and they're going to want to play it when people, and they probably also already own a PS3, you know, when PS3 players are playing it. So I think, yeah, I think it has caught somebody flat-footed, and they are stretched thin.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the next question, which comes from longtime show listener Hugo Vinegra, who says, why can't we get release dates for games like MLB, UFC, the World Cup? Are they afraid to commit and fail to deliver? Hey, everybody. Rich Grisham here. We interrupt the show for a moment to mention that the show was recorded on Wednesday, February 5th. But on Thursday, February 6th, EA did announce that FIFA World Cup will indeed be coming out on April 15th. However, it's only coming out on the 360 and the PS3, no next-gen version. So that came out the next day, wanted to mention that, and we'll obviously be talking about that quite a bit more on the next episode of the Press Row Podcast. So wanted to mention that. Now, back to the show. You know, it's interesting, and I didn't really think about it until Hugo pointed it out, but yeah, there's a whole slew of sports games that do not have release dates that are certainly coming up in this quarter or the next quarter. Personally, I am fine giving these initial launch games on new platforms a little bit of breathing room. While it's not like it used to be, where once a game ships, that's the game you have. Obviously, it's a patch culture. It's a completely different universe that we operate in. However, we have seen games launch like NBA Live that were not ready for prime time. And I would rather wait for something that is ready than for something that's not. And I can understand publishers and developers not quite being ready to commit to a date. Let's go around the table. Smith Sarkar, your thoughts on why we don't have release dates for any of these games?
Well, I think the show is certainly one that's at this point starting to worry some people, because, you know, we're recording this on February 5th and last year's game came out, I think, March 5th. And the more worrisome aspect for the show is that, you know, not only do we not have a concrete release date for any of the platforms, PS3, PS4, or Vita, but that we haven't heard anything about the game since the original announcement and, you know, the work in progress video and screenshots that they put out way back when. And, you know, that's kind of confusing. You know, as Brian pointed out, we've seen that the ESRB has listings for the PS3 and Vita versions, at least, but, you know, who knows how development is progressing. You know, because they've said so little, you know, there aren't really any explanations that we can even think up. I mean, maybe it's that they've got a whole new engine on PS4 or something that they're sort of having trouble wrangling to get the game running on or something or whatnot. But, you know, we really, it's all speculation at this point. Other games, you know, They've said all along that UFC wasn't going to launch until the spring. I think people are expecting May at this point. That game is far enough out, and it's far enough out that I'm not like, I mean, sure, it would be nice to have a release date, but I think as Owen was saying, you know, for the previous question, at this point, we're so early on these new consoles that I think a lot of publishers are wary of, giving a date and then missing it. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of times you'll see companies say, oh, it's coming in the spring or it's coming in May, but they may not want to give a concrete date until they're, closer and can be sure that they'll be able to hit it.
Cat Bailey?
I just referring to where everybody wondering where the heck MLB The Show is. NBA 2K, as an example, even though it's a different developer, is kind of notorious for waiting until the last minute to kind of take the wraps off their games. That wasn't the case this year, but it was the case the year before. And I don't know that we should necessarily be panicking about MLB The Show yet, even though it should be a showcase game for the PS4.
I got to jump in on this. Kat, I agree with you. I mean, obviously, we just went through a quarterly earnings call from Take-Two, and they, confirmed that they would have next-generation offerings for WWE and NBA, and they didn't, give any kind of a release date or even any kind of a release window for that. But it doesn't really matter because those are annual series, and they have sort of that market expectation. It's like, okay, NBA comes out in October, and WWE comes out in November, and MLB The Show comes out in March. And when you don't have, I think people are more forgiving, or at least more tolerant of the idea that, okay, these are things that go on sort of these quarterly announcing schedules because these are publicly traded companies, and announcing new products are things that move stock prices and get investor relations involved, and that's fine. So, we won't get really concerned about this until like it's 3 months out. It is 1 month out with Sony. And I'm agitated by this. I think a lot of people who follow me on Twitter and who have read me on Kotaku know I'm agitated by this idea. I don't think this is necessarily a crisis, but I sort of come back to wondering why I'm so keyed up about MLB The Show not having a formal release date a month ahead of when everybody assumes it's going to release, and why nobody is talking about, say, EA Sports MMA, or excuse me, EA Sports UFC. Man, I'm really dating myself there. which is sort of vaguely described as spring, but that could be June, and who knows, they could push that off. And I think it's also because the MMA calendar, there's no formal opening season there. It's not like baseball, it's not basketball, it's not football, where it's like, okay, here's opening day, and you would expect to have a video game in hand a month preceding it. So it can be a lot more fluid. Hell, golf used to release in June, which is
right in the middle.
Depending on when you describe the beginning of the season, whether it's the first major or actually the first event, it can be anywhere from 4 to 6 months, into the season. So, I understand what you're saying there. And yes, there are a lot of games that are annual titles that don't have announced dates. But this close, it's a bit of a different story. And we're going to need a really solid explanation. And I think one is coming soon. I mean, we got hints that I think if you call your local GameStop and you say, when is MLB The Show coming out, they're going to tell you April 1. And April 1 is a Tuesday. It is the beginning of a new quarter, but it is a Tuesday. I think that's a placeholder date. But I think we're going to get news soon that pegs some release of this series close to that date. But they've got it. We've got to have a really good story for why things went on this long with MLB The Show, because this is just, especially coming up against no competition. This doesn't make a lot of sense, and it only speaks to what I said earlier, which is this is a team that is really busting its ass. It is one team putting out two products, which it didn't have to do last year.
Brian Weed, same question to you, but with the added sort of qualifier, do you think the lack of release dates and information on these has to do with the fact that for a sports game to miss its date, whatever that date is viewed much more harshly than really any other kind of game?
Well, maybe. There's that stigma, if especially if you miss the start of a league season, which it looks like the show might. But there are, there are internal dates. They just haven't necessarily confirmed them. I've heard May 20th will be the date for UFC, And that makes a lot of sense with World Cup 22nd or 29th of April. Now, as far as the baseball games go, of course, we haven't heard anything about RBI baseball. I mean, anything about RBI baseball. So who knows about that? And, you know, that's kind of fallen off the ledge as far as consumer interest right now. But the show is concerning for all the reasons Owen mentioned. But then also because, you know, we're a month behind their typical release of information and videos and stuff. We've usually had a lot of that by mid-January. So that suggests a delay of some sort. And, you know, they didn't go to CES. Another thing that suggests something is different. There's obviously something going on. And as we discussed on the Press Row Hangout, you know, what I don't get is the secrecy, because eventually people are going to find out it's delayed and you haven't done yourself any favors by hiding that. It's not going to change what's happened. So and it's looking like it's going to be all versions. There are a ton of people who would be looking forward to it on the PS3, and it appears that, you know, that one will end up being pushed back too, not just the PS4 version. But it could release in mid-March or something, but at that point they'd have to start promoting it eventually. So, you know, it's just really curious to see what's going on with that and kind of the lack of any sort of acknowledgement of the game at this point, because we haven't heard anything since November. So obviously something is going on there. It's just a matter of what and when we'll find out what that is.
Chris Channer, your thoughts on this?
It seems like every next-gen game has been dealing with some sort of a kind of bill around it. I mean, it just feels like that. I mean, all the ones that released in November, I mean, we got information, little bits and pieces, but we didn't really get into the meat and potatoes of information season for any of those until a month before they released or so. And I mean, it makes me wonder if MLB The Show does the same thing, and, you know, we come around in the fall and this happens again. It makes me wonder if this is just some kind of a new thing, I guess, that we're dealing with. I don't know. It definitely makes it a whole lot less fun to cover the industry from our perspective if we're dealing with something like that to happen. So, but my goodness, I think honestly, I mean, we are right now about a month away from when the show traditionally releases. It's pretty obvious that if it is releasing in any form in a month, it is going to release with very little fanfare at this point. I mean, I don't know how much of a buzz you can get going if you just start releasing, you know, information 2 weeks before a game release. I mean, I mean, you're starting to really get into that kind of territory. So I don't know. I think it definitely is bad for people like us, because it's a whole lot less fun when you have days like today when there's just, I mean, really weeks like this week where there's really just nothing out there to discuss news-wise, and you're just kind of sitting there twiddling your thumbs wondering when/if we're going to get anything substantial from a developer.
Let me say that, you know, I think because of the quality of the series, people tend to overlook some of the actions SCA takes, and so it would be, you know, I look at comparable situations with other series. Imagine if we were at the end of July and EA hadn't talked about Madden, and it was apparent that it probably wasn't going to release at the end of August like usual. People would be going nuts. Imagine if we were beginning of September and 2K hadn't talked at all about NBA 2K, and its usual first Tuesday of release in October wasn't solidified, and it appeared that it was going to be delayed. I mean, there's reason to be concerned, not so much about the quality of the game, and this is something I've written about. It's not that we think, uh-oh, something's going to be wrong with the game. It's just that, well, there's something external going on here that is affecting, you know, a release date, and it's affecting the company from even talking about or promoting the game. So what does that mean? And naturally, people are going to wonder, what does that mean? And we can only speculate at this point, and generally that's going to be negative stuff. It doesn't mean the game's going to end up being troubled or anything like that, but it does mean that there's an uncertainty around it, which is, you know, it's unsettling at the very least.
All right, good stuff. We a couple more quick ones here. This one comes from Gareth Hammond. He says, can a video game recreate the kind of implosion a team can suffer, like the Broncos? Rarely good video game teams play bad. Now, this tweet immediately made me think of the Breaking Madden series, which I don't know if any of you have seen, but the recreation of the of the Seahawks versus the Broncos Super Bowl, not the recreation, but he said it where basically the Seahawks were a team of atomic supermen running roughshod over a team of Broncos that were not only as short as the game would make them, but also had like zero attributes. But it actually is a pretty interesting question, which is, is there any way for a, you know, video game to recreate that kind of a situation? I mean, we've all played that Madden game, right? Or that NHL game, Cat, where in the NHL, your goalie just has an off night and he just doesn't make the saves. We've all had those games in Madden where it's kind of like you can just tell that for whatever reason the game has decided it doesn't want you to win because of a poor fumble or a, you know, just whatever. But it seems like it would be the antithesis of what these games are about if you're playing a good game or playing a good team in a game and then just everything goes possibly wrong. Would it even be plausible for something like that to happen in a game? Cat.
Well, sure. It happens all the time in Madden. In terms of the CPU, when, for example, I'll be playing the CPU player, because of the hot and cold system, if you manage to get a few sacks on a quarterback or a receiver or something, oftentimes you will start collecting sacks and turnovers like nobody's business, even against really good quarterbacks. For example, in our Press Row Madden League, that's a plug, by the way.
Best league on the internet.
I played the Packers in week one, and Aaron Rodgers threw something on the order of like 3 or 4 interceptions that were returned for touchdowns, and I blew him out by like 30 points. It was a demolition. And you wouldn't think of the Packers falling completely apart, but in this case, I jumped on them early and they fell apart. And obviously when it comes to a player controlled situation, I've certainly had my games where I've fallen completely apart. I'm thinking about my first ever playoff game where I had the immortal Curtis Painter as my quarterback and I threw 6 interceptions against the Dallas Cowboys, which was pretty embarrassing. And I think it's actually, while I think the hot and cold system in Madden is a little too sensitive, to be perfectly honest, and a little nonsensical at times, I can have a player who's got really good stats be cold for some reason, or I could have a player who's doing really poorly but be hot. But you do see an effect on the game, and it can have a big impact on the flow of the game. And I think that's something that's fairly cool.
Chris Sanner.
Is my mic on? Sorry. Dang
yes,
it
is.
So anyways, this has a lot of, this has a wealth of theory behind it. There's a lot of, you know, obviously with sports, about how this works. And, mentally, it's hard to bring numbers into the mental aspect of the game. So that's what we're talking about with something like this. And the mental aspect of a game is, I mean, Richard Sherman automatically, does he get faster when he makes a good play? Does he, you know, does he have a better SWAT rating because he makes a good play and, you know, he's hot? Or is it simply the fact that he's just playing to his full potential already? I mean, it's just there's a lot. I think the physical things you can't mess with, and the mental things, I think, first off, the casual gamer who already thinks Madden is too complex, who already thinks NBA 2K14 is a mess of controls and there's no way they're ever going to learn it, is going to want to sit down to play their friend and all of a sudden their team is playing terrible just because they're mentally not there or something. I mean, I think that's something that developers have to deal with. But if you want to simulate it, you can. But you really got to get into some you've got to go to some directions where I think players will not enjoy it, so to speak, because you'll just be you would be playing a game, and I mean literally there would just be that game where everything goes wrong and things snowball, and it's usually, it feels like to me when something like that happens, I can point to where it was my mental mistake. It wasn't the simple fact that I had a receiver run the wrong route randomly, or lineman just completely misblocks the whole game. It's more along the lines of, well, I made that bad pass, I didn't make that cut, something like that, me as the guy with the controller. So I think to introduce some aspect of randomness, I think a lot of people would not enjoy that, actually.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys were thinking about it. I'm sure some of you at least did a little bit. When the first snap sailed over Peyton Manning's head and it was a safety, I thought to myself, if that happened to me the first play of like a playoff game in a Pressure Madden League, I would lose my mind. I would absolutely freak out. Brian Weida, what do you think about this?
Well, that kind of goes to the point I was going to make, and that's take Madden, for example, but this is true of all sports games, really, is that they lack that element of randomness. So you're not going to see a snap for that goes over the quarterback's head into the end zone. You're probably not going to return a kick for a touchdown, or it's going to be very rare. You're not going to return a punt for touchdown. And then in other areas, we know you can't block kicks or punts. You can't do surprise onside kicks. So there's a restrictiveness to the games that kind of prevent the snowball effect for the most part. Now, yeah, you can rattle a guy's confidence and those sort of things, but you're probably not going to see the avalanche of the type of thing that happened in the Super Bowl realistically happen in the video game, because they're programmed to be competitive, essentially.
Right.
So that's kind of the issue I strike there. And like you said, Rich, you don't want it happening to you. You know, you don't want something that's out of your control happening, but that's because you're not controlling all 11 guys at the same time, and you can't control all 11 guys at the same time. So a video game is going to be more restrictive by nature.
Yeah, and the thing I sort of harken back most to on this that I mentioned earlier is just my goaltender having a bad day in NHL. That would happen, and it would happen once out of every 9 or 10 games. You know, in last year's league especially, I have, you know, the Devils and Martin Brodeur, who was still very highly rated at the time. And most of the games, he would be terrific, and I wouldn't change anything that I'm doing. And then just for whatever reason, one game, he would just give up a bunch of bad goals, which, by the way, happens in the NHL. And that kind of randomness I was kind of okay with, because it is not like a snap, you know, going sailing over my quarterback's head. It's like, well, you know, sometimes your goaltender has a bad game. Sumit Sarkar, your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, you know, the funny thing is, You have some games that try to account for this, not the randomness, but the stuff with people getting hot and cold like Madden. But also, right, you know, I've been messing around with but looking at the other categories of things you can spend VC on in NBA and whatnot. Well, I guess you can't spend VC on this, but the personality stuff, mm-hmm, that's available in my career, where it's like, you know, alpha dog and beta dog. The right thing is that they have to account for this not with attributes and hard numbers, but it's these nebulous concepts of rhythm. Like, what the hell does that mean? You know, it's like, or how do you quantify that? You know, it's like, there's all these weird interactions that they try to account for, or situations that they try to account for, where it's like, oh, if you're, you know, a fan favorite, you come in and you make a few good plays, you'll feed off the energy of the crowd and your rhythm will go up or whatever. I don't know that I've noticed that in action when I have that equipped or whatever. But then, of course, you can also just program it in literally, you know, a team being bad or imploding, like they did when Midway made the original NBA Jam, where, because those guys are from Chicago, if you were playing the Detroit Pistons near the end of the game, trying to hit a last second shot with any Pistons, it wouldn't go in.
Just piggybacking on what was said earlier, I do think there is actually a random element in Madden. It's fumbling, and people tend to really hate it, especially if you end up fumbling like 3 times, and it's like a really soft fumble. It's not hit stick. It's just, oh, it just popped out of my hands for no good reason. People lose their mind when that happens, even though it's in the normal course of the game.
Yeah.
So developers end up having to balance, okay, well, we could have stuff like random blocked extra points and stuff like that, but people would go berserk, I think, right, and say that the game is broken and horrible. I think at this point, believe it or not, Madden does an okay job of balancing the, what we would say, a Madden moment or maddening, getting maddened with the concerns of having a fun game. I rarely come away feeling like I was just flat out unlucky in that game. That was ridiculous. But here's an example where I got really screwed by Madden was last year when I was playing Madden 13 and I was playing the Falcons. And I think that my receivers dropped 75% of my passes. I fumbled 3 times. It was just ridiculous. I could not actually get a first down because nobody would catch anything. So that's an example of a team just imploding.
Imploding. There you go.
I don't know. Rich, you and I got maddened pretty bad in that online game there where you randomly fumbled it and I ended up winning.
Yes. Yes. Let's not talk about that. How about we just move on to the last question, which is from Justin Matic, JLMatic54. I'm directing this right at you, Chris Sanner. As a fan of the NCAA football series, how much did today's National Signing Day hurt you?
Every bit of 0%, because there's actually nothing more worthless in the history of college football than National Signing Day.
Amen. I'm so glad you said that. The only thing more worthless, by the way, than National Signing Day is the NFL Draft Day. Same thing.
Literally, if you go through an NFL roster, and I actually did a brief study on this. I just did the Chiefs. If you actually look at it and break it down by their star ratings, the amount of guys who actually make the NFL who are 2 and 3 stars is absolutely absurdly high compared to 4 and 5 star guys. And that's also because there's less 4 and 5 star guys. The numbers add up all that. But my goodness, star ratings do not mean anything. I mean, Rich, I mean, you may be familiar with a guy named Eric Stryker who sacked A.J. McCarron like 20 million times. He was a 2-star recruit coming out of high school.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, Yeah, just a general point, though. I mean, like, it does not matter. These guys, I mean, their bodies don't mature until they're sophomores and juniors anyways. And, it was nice seeing that, you know, for instance, OU today, they got all their targets at the end of the day. I mean, literally, like, everybody they had been targeting, they signed. That's good to see. You trust that the coaches at your program, if you are one of our blue blood programs, Rich, like in Oklahoma or Alabama, you trust they've got things in the right direction. They've got the right recruits and such. It's nice to see, but call me in 3 or 4 years when these guys are juniors and seniors, and I'll talk about how important that signing day was. So yeah, I didn't miss it at all. I had to deal with some of the signing day BS today, and it was one of those days. It was just a day. I will miss NCAA football again when fall practice or spring practice starts up, and then fall practice starts up.
If I can jump in here, I mean, you know, Chris, I do agree. The attention given to National Signing Day is just ridiculous. And the expectations placed on, you know, those who made their decisions today is also undeserved. But at the same time, if the question is in the context of, you know, you as an NCAA football video gamer, yeah, I did think about the game today. And I think it was a game that kind of got the ridiculousness of National Signing Day without parodying it. But I mean, when you look at it, when you look at the recruiting system of NCAA football, and in some ways it was very, very easy to manipulate, and you could just go all in on that 5-star guy. And I think in the past year, I haven't played in a while, but you know, you got this huge pool of recruiting points at the end of the year, you know, beyond what you normally had to just, you know, bring the kitchen sink on a recruit and make whatever promises. And in the past, actually, that's right. So you had the big pool of recruiting points this year, but in the past, I mean, you could tell anybody, I'll make you a starter if you come here. And then as soon as they get there, you screw them, you know, or I guarantee we'll win the national championship. And as soon as they get there, I don't know, you go to the Weed Whacker Bowl. But I think NCAA football, this is why I kind of saw the news today and thought of the game and sort of went, oh, we're missing something, is because it is NCAA football, for whatever you had to say about it, I mean, it's a very good game. It was a unique personnel management game. All the other games, you sort of have to simulate contract terms or free agent interest or trade interest or things like that. NCAA football is all about, can you know, this, you know, this dough head from Dothan, Alabama, to come play offensive line for me at NC State.
And when you did, you're like, damn, I got the art of the conversation. You know, it had nothing to do with, like, you know, figuring out what the algorithm was in terms of, you know, so-and-so is thus and such a rated player, and he wants this many years on his contract and this many millions of dollars. It was just like, you know, is he interested in academics? Do I have a good school? No. Well, did I run down the other guy enough? And the disproportionate weight placed on your recruiting class, yes, it's absolutely, it's garbage. You know, exactly what you said. You know, these are you can coach up players, you know, to be just all world performers, and then they had nothing going for them in scouts or rivals or whatever. But I think NCAA football is one of the games that sort of got the importance, not necessarily to it got the importance of a five-star recruiting class, not necessarily to next year's performance, but to keeping your job. And that's what today is all about. That's really what today is all about, is Dave Doran at NC State and all the PR that I saw on my Twitter feed going to keep his job. You know, I mean, they're not going to fire him next year. I don't know how long his contract is, but they're not going to kill him after 2 years. But, you know, is he doing his job? That's all it's about.
Good stuff. And that, folks, is a wrap. And before we go, submits our car. You, sir, are the curator of a rather fine exhibit happening in New York City. How long is that running for? And what's the latest info on that?
Yeah, it's an exhibit on the history of the Madden NFL franchise. It's called Madden NFL 25 Years in Running. It's at the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, New York, which is in Queens, for those who don't know. It'll be there until February 23rd, so people still have some time if they happen to be in the area or come into town in the next few weeks. It's been doing pretty well. I was actually there for they had this media event last week, and EA was there, and they had a panel with Cam Newton, Michael Vick, and Marshall Faulk. And then they went up to the we all went up to the actual exhibit room, and so they have Madden 25 on an Xbox One set up on a big projection screen, and Vick played Newton. So that was pretty cool for sure.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I was actually supposed to go that night, but thanks to real work stuff getting in the way, I wasn't able to make it. But I do plan on getting there before the end of the exhibit. So congratulations again, good work, sir.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
As always, thank you so much for listening. It's been a lot of fun. Another great show, another great panel. I hope everybody enjoyed the Super Bowl, or at least as much as you possibly could if your name isn't Brian Weed. I hope everybody enjoys the Olympics coming up. I know I am personally a big fan of the Winter Olympics. I'm going to have a lot of fun watching it. Hoping, obviously, that everything goes well there. So, on behalf of Brian Weedye from Pasta Padre, Kat Bailey from the Internet, Chris Sander from Operation Sports, Owen Good from Kotaku, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, I am Rich Grisham, also from the Internet. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes, subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio, look for it on your favorite podcast app, follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast, or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate and review it and comment on it while you're there, too. That helps us keep the show going. And make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follow: Operation Sports, Chris Sander at Chris_SNR, Kotaku's Owen Good at Owen Good, Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS, Pasta Padre's Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre, and me, your host, Richard Grisham at Rich Grisham, and of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. As always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every time we can, and we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports or you, our listeners. Thanks, we'll see you again really soon.